Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rabbi Saul Solomon here on the Dave's Gone By radio program. I am very happy and very excited to be talking to not only a comedian, but a Jewish comedian, which actually most of the time is redundant, but still, very, very happy to have all the way from New York, Dave Koenig. Listen to this man's resume. He has been on Broadway in...
Big deal.
Wait, I heard Dave on the... Did you just say big deal?
Big deal. Hey, are you a Jewish rabbi in Colorado?
You must have
Jewish cowboys out there. You know what a Jewish cowboy says?
What's a Jewish cowboy say?
Says, yippee-yo, hi-yay.
Damn it. Oh, you're making me laugh already. This, of course, is Dave Koenig on the phone. He was from HBO's Hardcore TV series, USA Network's... Dave Koenig, will you let me do the intro, goddammit? Will you let me introduce you for crying?
Go ahead. Read all my meaningless credits from TV shows long canceled. Go ahead.
Do you interrupt the Rebbe in Shul when he's doing a sermon for crying out loud? Anywho.
All right, go ahead.
And also one of the main reasons that I wanted to talk to this man, not just because he was on the Joey Reynolds show so many times, but because he did an off-Broadway one-man show called Hebrew School Dropout. So I will say, first of all, now I will say, welcome, Dave Koenig.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you on the air, Rabbi. Good Shabbos to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being courteous for once. Nice to hear this. Now, let me ask about Hebrew School Dropout. What a sad thing. Were you really? I mean, tell me.
Oh, yeah, I was a Hebrew school dropout. I ended up hanging out on the street corners with all the other Hebrew school dropouts, smoking cigarettes and shooting craps and not being able to read Hebrew. It was rough. It was rough out there.
Now, wait a minute. How much of that is joke, ha-ha, and how much is actually, like, because you're not
every
that old.
Every word I tell you, Rabbi, I would never lie to a rabbi. Every word I tell you is the God's honest truth.
It's the emes, as we like to say. The emes.
It's the pure emes.
It's the emes.
Take it right to the bank.
Straight from the anus, that's what I like to say there.
But good. Now, did you tell the folks I was on Broadway, or did I interrupt you?
I said Grease, but what else were you in?
That was it. That was my big Broadway show. I was in the Broadway musical Grease back in the 90s. I played the DJ Vince Fontaine, and I was in the big Tommy Tune production of Grease. It was a fabulous production.
Now, let me ask you something, because believe it or not, and for no particular reason, I was reading about this. Who was in charge of that? Was it Tommy Tune or Jeff Calhoun? Do not ask me why.
Jeff, actually, you're good. You're up to date with your obscure Broadway references.
I know a lot of gay people. What can I tell you?
Jeff Calhoun is a great guy. He was the director of the show. Well, he's a choreographer, and now he's also a director. And he directed the show. Tommy Tune kind of designed the production. And he came up with the idea of sort of taking Grease, which was, you know, kind of a gritty show from the 70s, a little bit gritty, and making it into more of a fabulous musical comedy review. And the role of Vince Fontaine, the DJ, sort of became the host of the evening. So I was on stage for hours every night. I mean, I had to do a pre-show audience warm-up for half an hour. I'd warm up the crowd as they were coming in, and then I'd do bits in between the scenes. And I opened the second act with a big musical number, and I can't sing at all. So that was quite a feat.
What song did you sing? What did you have to sing there?
I sang the second act. Here's the thing. When I auditioned for the show...
Yes.
The big producer, Barry Weisler, who's right out of Central Casting. He's a beautiful man. But Barry Weisler, suntan, $2,000 suit.
Oh, yes.
He's a big shot. So when I auditioned for the show, I did some comedy. He loved that. He was cracking up. He says, can you sing? I said, can I sing? Can I sing? I said, no, Barry, I can't sing. But here's what you do, because I had seen the show. You take the number I do. You turn my microphone down, you turn the backup singer's microphones up, I'll fake my way through the song, no one will be the wiser. So every show, I would open the second act of this big Broadway musical. I'd come out center stage, I can't sing at all, I'd come out center stage, and I'd belt out this terrible number, Shaking at the High School Hop.
Shaking at the High School, God, all right.
One of the lousiest songs ever written.
Son of a palsy, I hate it, yes.
Listen, Sock Hop Baby... Roll up your crazy jeans, gonna rock to the music, gonna dig the scene. These are the lyrics. So I would come out center stage, and they would turn my mic down. They turned the backup singer's mics up, and I'd fake my way through the song, and everybody was fine. Every couple of weeks, the musical director of the show, Vincent Fanuel, would come up to me in the dressing room after the show. And he'd come up and say, Dave, great show tonight. He said, listen, we could hear you sing tonight. And I say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, every couple of weeks I get a little carried away. I'd belt out the song, you know.
Oh, that's funny. That's an absolute.
That's how you start a Broadway musical with no musical talent whatsoever.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, as amusing as that sounds, Rex Harrison was not exactly a great tenor in the Pavarotti mode.
He was not. But even Rex Harrison, with all his style and all his class, I don't think he could have done much with Sock Hop Baby, Roll Up Your Crazy Jeans.
He could sprach sing it, as Brecht would say. Oi, now I have to clean phlegm off the microphone. Hold on. Wait, it's all over the mic now.
What's the matter? You got all over the microphone?
It's my morning chuch. It's horrible. It's on the keyboard. It's on the mic. Hey, they have to send a cleaning crew after I every time I'm on the radio. It's very sad.
That's more information than I needed, Rabbi.
But that was your only Broadway.
That was my big Broadway show. But then you're right. I did. I had an off-Broadway show, my solo show called Hebrew School Dropout.
Right.
And that ran for quite some time off Broadway, and I got great reviews in the New York Times, and it was fantastic.
Well, good. Now, how would you say your off Broadway show differed from your normal stand up comedy act?
Well, in theater, my show Hebrew School Dropout. I was basically telling a story for about an hour and 15 minutes. And the story was how I converted from Judaism to Catholicism and then converted back to Judaism and lost those stubborn last 10 pounds. So that was the story I was telling.
You know, I just had a heart attack and got healed in one sentence.
And that's the kind of effect I had on my audiences as well with this show.
Why would you convert to Catholicism?
I had a little bit of a midlife crisis, you see, and whereas some guys go out and get a convertible and a blonde, I converted to Catholicism. And this was a phase of my life that lasted for a year or so. But then what happened to me was...
Wait. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Now I get to be rude because it's
go right ahead. It's your show.
It's my segment, damn it. Now, wait a minute. Midlife crisis, did you have a vision? Was it like Bob Dylan where you saw Jesus in the pool and then you got baptized by Billy? I mean, you don't just convert for the hell of it because you turn a certain age. What the hell?
I had a vision, but my vision was of Bob Dylan, so it was a confusing time in my life.
And he has visions of Johanna, so it's sort of this daisy chain that goes, no, but seriously, you don't,
yes.
What the hell? What?
Well, listen. I'm married to a beautiful Irish Catholic girl.
Yes.
And we have kids, and we're raising the kids Catholic, which actually works out fine, Rabbi. It's no big deal, except that.
I'm sure your mom and dad are thrilled with that.
No, they're dead, so they're out of the picture.
Wait a minute. Wait, I'm sorry again to interrupt you. And I normally don't. Well, I normally do this, but forgive me. How old are you? Because you look about 43.
I'll take that. Good, thanks. Moving on.
No, are you really? Are you in your 50s? You do not look it.
No, I'm not in my 50s, Rabbi. I'm 43.
All right.
You nailed it.
Yeah, okay. All right, but at that age, four kids, my God. You got busy young.
Which is a lot of kids. But, so we had to raise the kids Catholic, you know, because my wife's Irish and I'm Jewish. And that works out fine, except they think my kids might be a little anti-Semitic, just a little.
Really?
You hear comments. Oh, yeah. I don't want to make a big deal. The other day, my 4-year-old son asked me if I'd buy him his own real car. I thought that was kind of cute. I said, no, Daddy can't do that. That would cost too much money. You know what he said?
What?
He said, you people. That's all you ever think about.
I love that. Love that line.
I built a clubhouse in the backyard, Rabbi. I asked if I could join. My 8-year-old pulled me aside. He said, look, if it were up to me. The other day, I told my kids to turn off the TV. When I left the room, I swear one of them said, "See, I told you they control the media." So these are the things I go through in my life.
I don't. Very fun. Now I can't play the song, the thing I was going to play after
that's
the interview.
All right, that's all right.
You just took all the damn jokes out of it. God damn it. All right.
But I'll tell you something, Rabbi. Here's what happened. I went through a little religious conversion experience. And so what I did was I converted to Catholicism because I was tagging along with my wife and going to church with her basically crowd control with the kids. But what happened to me is I was going to explore my new faith very quietly, I wasn't going to make a big deal out of it. And then about a couple of months later, I got hired as a national spokesman for the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And I was hosting a national radio show on the Catholic Channel.
Really?
And yes. So this is what my show is about. And then so I went to work for these guys. And let me tell you something, Rabbi.
Yes?
You take a Jewish guy, you convert him to Catholicism, you put him to work for the Catholic Church, there's nothing that'll make him run to temple faster than go back to Judaism than working for the Catholic Church. I believe you.
I want details. I want examples. I want more reason to hate people who aren't like me. Please, tell me, divulge.
Well, I'll tell you. No, suffice it to say, It was an unusual choice on their part. I mean, here they were, they're the Catholic Church. They have a Catholic radio show, and they hire as their morning show host an opinionated, loudmouth Jewish comic. So what could possibly go wrong? It was a match made in hell, is what it was.
But were you expected to proselytize at all, or were you just kind of doing happy good news sort of?
I was doing the exact same radio show I would have done anywhere else. What I did was I had I was uncomfortable because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And so, with the Catholics. So I had every Jewish comedian I know come on the show. I emptied out the Friars Club and put them all on the show. So they never knew what hit them. I mean, they tune on. Here I was hosting a show on the Catholic radio network, and they and I was working for the church. I mean, I was working for Cardinal Egan here in New York, and they Cardinal Egan would turn on the radio, and he'd hear me interviewing Jackie Mason, Freddie Roman. So it was pretty nutty. It was pretty nutty.
Oh, excuse me for the laughing there. That's,
I mean, they didn't know what the hell to do with me, so.
I apologize, audience. I lost control there for a minute. I find this so hysterical. Of Cardinal Egan listening to this. Oh, it's wonderful. So wait a minute.
So that's what my show, Hebrew School Dropout, is about. It's about that experience. So anyway, go ahead, Rabbi.
I was just going to ask, so at one point you realized that the Catholicism thing really wasn't going to take. It was not, did you ever at one point convince yourself that you believed in you-know-who?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rabbi, you can convert to Catholicism, and you can marry a Catholic, and you can raise your kids Catholic, and you can go to Catholic church, and you could even get hired as a radio host for a national Catholic radio channel. But the way they look at you, you're still a Jew.
Yes.
Bottom line, you're still a Jew. So I was, it was a classic fish out of water situation. It was sort of like a gefilte fish out of water is what it was.
But wait, I used to have a... Oh, hold on. Do not go away. Wait one second.
I will not go anywhere.
This is very important because I want you to tell that joke again. Not yet. Hold on. Tell the joke again. Now.
With me on the radio for the Catholics, as a Jew,
yes.
You can listen. The whole thing with the as you can convert to Catholicism.
Well, no, it was the fish out of water thing. Please do that.
Oh, for me, I was a Jewish comic. I was working on a Catholic radio channel. It was a classic fish out of water. It was essentially a gefilte fish out of water situation as well.
Well, I had the rim shot there. You couldn't hear it, but it was beautiful.
I'm glad. That's good. I live for that.
When it comes to humor and hanging there, I am known for my rim jobs there. It's wonderful.
I beg your pardon?
I do that very, very...
Is that what you're known for?
Absolutely. When they come to me and they need a rim shot, they know to come to Rabbi Saul Solomon for that rim job. Yes, absolutely.
Hey, Rabbi, I want to plug my... Can I plug my comedy CD? If anyone's actually listening, they're probably enjoying me by now, so maybe I can sell them a CD.
Why does everybody who called this show say, if anybody's listening? This is what everybody who calls this program says, if anybody happens to be... Yes, there's people listening.
That's the mystery of radio, is we don't know because we don't have a live audience. When you walk out on stage, you can see the audience. On radio, we have no idea, right?
Let me tell you something.
Could be millions of people listening, or it could be three guys sitting in a phone booth listening to this thing.
I have a dead audience. My ancestors are listening. They're listening from the beyond to hear the wisdom.
Well, your ancestors would love my new comedy CD.
What's it called?
Dave Koenig. It's called Dave Koenig, Your Face is Crooked.
Dave?
And it's available on Dave Koenig, KONIG.com, or iTunes, or CD Baby. It's fantastic. It was picked at Stage Time Magazine, which is a very prestigious stand-up comedy magazine, picked it as the pick hit of the month. So it's a good CD. You'll like it.
Dave Koenig, Your Face is Crooked. You can get it at his website, DaveKoenig.com, or I guess all the usual places where you can buy
it. Yeah, iTunes and CD Baby, all that good stuff. And it's Dave Koenig, KONIG.
And it's a hard CD, too. It's not just files. You can download it as files,
well,
but there's an actual disc.
If you're so inclined. I don't want to tell you what to do in the privacy of your own home with your computer. That's what got Anthony Weiner in trouble. But
Hello.
You can download it, or you can get a physical copy of it, whatever makes you happy. We're going to work with you no matter what you need.
Do you have it on 8-track?
I got it on 8-track. I got it on Betamax. Are you kidding me?
Oh.
We got everything covered. Every conceivable platform we got covered.
Do you have that on standard 8mm? I missed that.
That's
I missed
right.
that so much.
That's right. Absolutely.
Tell us, Dave Koenig. And by the way, my name is Rabbi Saul Solomon. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio, and we're talking with wonderful comedian Dave Koenig. You were on that HBO show called Hardcore TV. Unfortunately,
Hardcore TV.
I never saw this because we have a lockbox, because I have 21 and a half children, so it blocks out anything with that name. What was was it really filthy dirty, or what? Or was it just comedians, or what? What was it?
Hardcore TV was on back in the 1990s, and it was a late night sketch comedy show on HBO. It aired at midnights on HBO, so it was a little risque, a little bawdy. And I was the host of the show, and it was an R-rated sketch comedy show. And I would come out in between the sketches and say witty and clever things like, you know, hey, how about the boobs on that broad? You know, it was very sophisticated. It was kind of like the wit of the Algonquin Round Table, if you will.
But see, this is why I'm a little surprised, because listening to your CD and your a lot of clips of you on YouTube, you work relatively clean. You don't use.
I am relatively clean. You're absolutely right.
So was it?
I am relatively clean.
So were you like the palate cleanser between the filth?
Yes. That's right. It's exactly what I was. You know, it's funny you should say that, because Hardcore TV was, you know, it was an R-rated sketch comedy show. It was kind of like, you know, the precursor to things like the Chappelle Show or things like that. It was a little racy. And, I was the palate cleanser. I'd come out in a suit and tie in between the sketches and trying to add a little class to the situation. This is essentially the story of my entire show business career. I'm always slightly off to the... I'm always out of kilter. You put me in a suit and tie, I work clean, and then I'm hosting a dirty... comedy show. I'm a Jew. You put me on the radio. I'm hosting a Catholic radio. I can never quite get, you know, it's like that. I can't quite get the angles all smoothed out. I don't know what it is.
So let me ask also, though, about on a cleaner network, as it were. You were on USA Network doing something called the Dave Koenig Show. I assume you hosted it. How was that?
Yes. That was great. I was the host and the writer and the producer, and the Dave Koenig Show was the world's shortest talk show. It was a 5-minute talk show that aired briefly on the USA Network. I had a 5-minute talk show. I would come out. I would do a monologue. I had a band. I had the Dave Koenig Orchestra, the Dave Koenig Dancers, the Not Ready for Dave Koenig Players, and I would have celebrity guests, and I'd do a quick interview, and then we'd get the hell out. And the whole thing took from beginning to end 5 minutes. It was the best possible late-night comedy talk show for people with attention deficit disorder.
But that's actually genius. I love that idea of conflating everything into the whole thing and just the massive production values to get like 3.5 minutes of actual airtime. I mean, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
How long
that's really all you need, quite frankly. I mean, how many times do you watch a late-night comedy variety comedy show, and after 5 minutes you get bored and you change the channel? This way, boom, I got the whole thing done. From beginning to end, under 5 minutes, you were done. You could move on with the rest of your life.
So let me ask. I'll bet you they came to you and they said, well, the problem is we're only doing 5 minutes, and the budget to have the orchestra and the band, we can't afford it.
No, this was a very lucrative. I signed a big three-figure deal for this one, so it was a very, very lucrative situation.
Well, no, but tell me something. This,
yes.
Because if I were in that situation, I'd say, oh, I've got a show on USA Network. It's 5 minutes, da-da-da-da. And then, like, after the first season, they say, sorry, we're not going to. I mean, how does that feel, and how do you go through that?
I fully expect nothing but failure the moment I begin any project, so I'm rarely disappointed. I mean, in that case, I was doing the world's shortest talk show, so it came as no surprise to me that I got the deal, and then the show was canceled in fairly rapid order. It all happened very quickly, just like the show itself.
Well,
so it fit right in. It was perfect.
Are you one of these people, and it's not that I blame them or anything, I envy them, but who have to go every year to California when they're casting for the season, you know, the birds, like Jews go to Florida a certain time of the year, actors
right.
and comedians go to...
Yeah, sure. I've been out to L.A. a number of times for a bunch of different projects, but I prefer New York. I'll tell you, it's L.A.'s. The thing about L.A. is that, you know, it's a company town, you know, and what the company is selling is youth and fame. So if you're not 22 years old and incredibly famous, you know, you can't get by too well in L.A., and this is why everyone goes nuts and joins Scientology. So there's something in the air out there that is just not healthy for the human brain.
So let me ask, without getting into particulars of finances and that, but I am Jewish, so I'm interested in money.
Sure. What do you need? How much do you need?
Oh, well, we'll talk off the air about that. But
how much,
very good. Can I ask, living in New York, therefore, and
yes.
How much do you need to live? Do you make a good living by doing stand-up, by doing what cobbling together? What's your mainstream of income? Is it stand-up?
I stand up and I do voiceover work, but there's a famous story, of course, about a stand-up comic, a Jewish stand-up comic.
Of course.
And he's in New York and he works, you know, and he's leaving the Friars Club one day and he's crossing the street and he gets hit by a car. He gets hit by a car. He's lying on the ground. Man runs up to him, says, can I help you? Are you okay? Let me put this coat under your head. Are you comfortable? And he says, I make a living.
Bam, bam. Oh, wait. Oh, God damn it! I would have had...
Where the hell's your rib shot when you need it, Rabbi? Come on. Work with me here.
There we go.
There you go.
That felt good. It always feels like taking a really, really wonderful dump when I hit that button. It's just,
That's fantastic. That's a classic stuff.
Thank you. I told you, you're too clean for this show. That's the
Absolutely.
Strange part.
No, I'm doing okay. I have all my money. All my money is invested in credit card debt, so I'm doing very well. I'm fine.
Do you remember, Dave Cunningham,
yes.
your very first stand-up comedy gig?
I do. I can't forget, and I'll tell you why. Here's the story. I'm glad you asked that, because this is also in my one-man show, Hebrew School Dropout. The very first time I started out as an obnoxious young child actor in the theater, and I was working in show business for some time. But when I was a young boy of 20-ish, I used to hang out at a stand-up comedy club in New York called the Comic Strip.
Oh, sure.
And I would hang out there every night. I'd sit in the back. I'd watch all the comedians. I'd soak up the atmosphere, but I didn't talk to anyone. I was nervous about it. So I did this for weeks and weeks and weeks. There was one comic who used to get up every night, and he'd get on stage, and he would do the silliest stuff, and he would just bomb. Nobody would laugh at this guy's stuff, except for me. I thought he was hysterical, and I would be cracking up. And after a couple of weeks of watching this guy every night and being the only one laughing at his act, I got up the nerve to approach him. And I said, listen, I just want to tell you, I think you're terrific and I think you're very funny. And I really love your act. And the guy said, that's great. He said, are you a comic? I said, no, I'm not. But, he said, well, you should be. You got a great voice and you got a great look and I think you would do really well. And he was encouraging me. Well, this goes on for several days with this guy encouraging me to get up on stage. And I would kind of beg off. I go, well, I'm not ready yet. That kind of thing.
Right.
Finally, he says to me, he says, look, if you don't get up on stage and do some stand-up comedy, I'm not going to let you hang out in this club anymore. And I said, okay. I said, tell you what, I'll come back tomorrow and I'll show you some jokes I wrote and you tell me what you think. So I go back the next day and I hand him like a couple of pages of typewritten jokes, and they're terrible jokes. I mean, the kind of jokes you write when you're things like, I'm sorry I'm late, I was shopping at Macy's and the escalator broke down, I was stuck there for hours, Now that deserves a rim shot. So he looks at the jokes. He goes, okay, all right, great. He says, okay. He says, wait one second. Uh-oh. He walks into the showroom. We were outside in the lot, by the bar. He walks into the showroom. He comes back out. He grabs me. He shoves me into the showroom. He says, you're on. And he shoves me into the showroom just as the MC was introducing me. I said, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, a real comedy rebel, Dave Koenig.
Oh, my God.
And that was the first time I ever did stand. I got up on stage. I had about 5 minutes. I did my 5 minutes. It went great. I got to say, yeah. I got a lot of laughs, and I felt great about it. And then I never saw the guy who shoved me into that room. I swear to you, I've never seen him since. And that guy, ladies and gentlemen, that kid was Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler. Isn't that something?
That's his. I knew it was building towards something. I know.
Yeah, well, it better be after all that. I better come up with something better than the. And that kid was Murray Lipschitz. You know, who knows from that?
I know Murray. He was amusing.
You know Murray. Well, see, there you go. But it was Adam Sandler. He was right at the end of his time at the comic strip. He'd already started doing some TV work and was getting to be a little bit of a name for himself. And he's the one who encouraged me and shoved me out on the stage. Shortly thereafter, he was gone from the comic strip. He had moved on and, was doing, shortly thereafter, I guess he ended up on Saturday Night Live, and he became a huge star. And I've never seen him since. I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
I told that story that I just told you to another comedian here in New York area, a very funny guy named Vic DiBattista. And I told Vic the Adam Sandler story. And there used to be a comedy club in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, called Pips. And it was kind of a hole in the wall.
David Brenner used to work there, I think, a lot.
How's that?
I think David Brenner used to work at Pips quite a lot.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised, yeah. And so I tell Vic the Adam Sandler story, and then Vic tells me this story. He says, you know what? He says, similar thing happened to me. He said, 25 years ago, Adam Sandler got me into Pips. He said, I called him up recently. I said, Adam, 25 years ago, you got me into Pips. Can you get me out? very funny guy.
But you have never had the chance to thank Adam Sandler?
I have never had the chance to thank Adam Sandler for that major thing he did in my life. But someday I will, I'm sure. And Adam will say, who are you? And he'll call his security and they'll haul me out. So that, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, actually, Adam is probably listening because, as you said, Jews do control the media. So he
That's
has
right.
to make
and
sure.
He's probably monitoring this show, as all Jews must monitor all media at all times, even as we speak. So
he's probably in
his control room right now.
We are on UNC Radio, the radio station of the University of Northern Colorado, live streaming on uncradio.com. You're listening to Dave's Gone By. I am not Dave. I am Rabbi Saul Solomon here at 11:01 in the morning Mountain Time talking to Dave Koenig, the hilarious comedian. Dave, do you have a few more minutes to stay with us?
Outstanding, sir. I absolutely.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Let us remind people that they should buy immediately Your Face is Crooked, CD by Dave Koenig. Brand new CD available at DaveKoenig.com, K-O-N-I-G, and also at Amazon and wherever.
iTunes and CD Baby and all that good stuff. I'm so happy.
Bed Bath Beyond, all those places. What? Sorry?
I'm so happy to be doing this show with you, Rabbi, on the University of Colorado radio. I'm a big big fan of the University of Colorado. I didn't go to college myself. I was when all my friends went off to college, I took some time off to find myself.
Did you?
And I did. Yeah, I found myself hungover and unemployed for many years. But you know what I did, Rabbi? I enrolled recently in an online college program.
Did you?
Which is great for a guy like me because I'm married. I got kids. Very hard for me to go to school. But at night, while the kids are watching TV, I get on the computer. I get me some of that college experience I missed out on.
Such as?
Like the other night, my fraternity, we had a big toga party. That was great. I took off all my clothes, wrapped myself up in a sheet, got really drunk, sat down at the computer, and typed toga, toga, toga. It was good.
That's good. That's exciting. I like this.
We had a big pep rally for the school football team.
Really?
Yes. You want to hear? We have a team chant. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Online college can't be beat. Kill the other team. Hit Control Alt Delete. So that's exciting.
That's really good.
And I'll tell you, I can't wait for spring break. I'm going to CaboSanLucas.com. It'll be great.
You can hear, by the way, these jokes on the new CD. Your face is crooked. They won't have the immediacy quite of actually talking to the man on this radio as we are right now, but still, they're very, very, very funny.
And thank you, Rabbi.
On Your Face is Crooked. Let me ask also to Dave Koenig. That was a great story about your very first comedy stand-up gig. Do you remember your very worst stand-up comedy
gig? Yes.
Is it this one? No, I'm kidding.
Well, no, this is good. I'm enjoying this. I'll tell you, I do remember. A lot of comedians have stories of their worst experiences on the road and then hell gigs. I got one. I was booked to do a show, do some comedy, in a restaurant in Secaucus, New Jersey. Now, right off the bat, this does not bode well because, you know, Secaucus and restaurants and, you know, comedy, it's a bad mix.
Was Uncle Floyd your piano player or something like that?
No. Uncle Floyd's terrific. I did a movie with Uncle Floyd once, but that's another story. So I drive out to Secaucus. I get to Secaucus, New Jersey for this gig. The entire town is under martial law. There's police and firemen everywhere, and traffic's being diverted, and I can't get anywhere near the restaurant where the show is, and I'm told you got to go park on the other side of town and walk over, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So I do. I park my car. I walk all the way over to this restaurant where the show is supposed to be, and the restaurant is actually, there's police tape surrounding the restaurant. They've cordoned off the restaurant. No one can get in. And I see the producer of the show. He's standing out front. He's pacing back and forth. He's chain smoking. And I go up to him. I say, we're just a few minutes before showtime. And I say, what the hell's going on? And apparently, right across the street, there was a bus stop. And there was a guy sitting at the bus stop. And there was an old lady in a car. And she was apparently too old to be driving.
Oh,
either that or she just really hated this guy sitting at this bus stop. But she pressed the gas when she should have pressed on the brakes. She plowed right into the bus stop, and she killed the guy. The poor bastard was killed, and he was decapitated. It was horrible. And we're supposed to do the show now in front of this, where this tragedy had occurred. And the whole town is cordoned off. So I said to the producer, I said, look, I said, given the circumstances, I said, you know, I understand if you want to cancel the show. I mean, obviously you can't get an audience in here. You know, the place is cordoned off by police tape. The whole town's under martial law. This poor bastard has been killed at this bus stop. I understand totally if you want to cancel the show. I get it. Okay. You don't even have to pay me. We'll do this some other time. And he said, let's give it a little time. Maybe they'll take the police tape down.
Oh, God.
Now, which, by the way, that's show business right there. That should be engraved and put over the entrance to every theater and every comedy club in America. Let's give it a little time. Maybe they'll take the police tape down.
Well, you know, Dave Koenig, not to interrupt, but you know the famous show business phrase, the show must go on?
Yeah, in this case, the show does not necessarily have to go on.
Well, but what I wanted to say about that is everybody thinks, oh, the actors say this. Oh, you know, we've got to do it for the theater and da-da-da. It was always the producers who were saying it. There was never the actor. The actors would go home. They go out drinking. They don't care. It's the producers. It's like, I'm out of money. The show must go on. You know?
That's right. I think the show business adage, the show must go on, should be changed to the show must go on unless the show is in Secaucus, New Jersey, at a restaurant where a guy has just gotten decapitated across the street. In that case, the show does not necessarily have to go on. So we stand there, I'm standing there with this idiot, waiting, and hours go by, literally. We wait 2 hours. Finally, they take the police tape off, they clear away the broken glass, and about three people come in, and they're sitting there, and they're waiting for a show to start. Three people who've been hanging out and waiting. It was ridiculous. So I figured, all right, I got to do a show for these three people on this night where this guy has gotten killed and all this bad stuff has happened. You know, it's ridiculous for me to go up on stage at this point. Let me at least sit down with these people and chat with them, you know, to kind of warm the situation up a little. So I sit down at the table before the show, and I'm chatting with these three confused people. And, you know, we actually start chatting. We actually, you know, have a little human interaction. And I get them loosened up a little, and we're kind of smiling and chatting, and things are going okay. And then there's a pause in the conversation. And a guy says, one of the three guys, he says, gee, it's a shame about the guy who lost his head. And I agreed. I said, yes, you're absolutely right. It's a terrible shame. At which point the MC jumps up on stage and says, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the hilarious comedy of Dave Koenig. Now, I'd like to tell you, Rabbi, that given the circumstances, despite all the obstacles thrown my way, I was able to reach deep down and pull out the greatest show of my life. But the truth is, I bombed. It was a terrible show.
Of course.
And I had a miserable time. The three people had a miserable time. And, of course, the guy who lost his head had a miserable time. So that's the worst gig I ever did.
That's wonderful. Oh, my God. What a story. Oh.
But I learned something. I learned something from it. I learned you're either living in fear or in faith. Or you're living in Secaucus, New Jersey, in which case, don't take the bus. This is what I learned.
Dave Koenig talking about being a comedian, the best of times, the absolute worst of times. Can I ask you, Dave, as you were getting your start in comedy, while you were watching these comedians and Adam Sandler and all these folks, were you doing other jobs, like day jobs, and to get by?
Oh, my God. I've done every conceivable, horrible job you could think of to make a buck. I have done at some point in my life. I've been, just the worst, which builds character. But you know what? A little of that goes a long way. You know, at a certain point, your character is all built, and, you know, enough is enough. But, yes, I've done everything you could do. When I was a teenager, I was kind of a troubled youth. And I left home when I was 16. I was a youngster. And I was doing the kind of jobs you would do when you were 16. I got hired to sell magazine subscriptions, newspaper for the New York Times. I got hired to do phone sales. So I was selling newspaper subscriptions. They had a terrible system where when you made a sale, what you would get paid a portion of your commission right away. And then they would hold another portion of the commission for a couple of weeks to make sure the sale stuck.
That makes sense, though, no?
How's that?
That makes sense, doesn't it?
You would think so. Yet, if you were hiring juvenile delinquents to do your phone sales like they were doing, which is what I was doing, the juvenile delinquents quickly figured out that no matter what, if the sale is bad, it doesn't matter. You still get a commission up front.
Oh, boy.
So what we would do is we would go through the phone book and we just call up every name in Chinatown we could find. And we call up all these poor schmucks in Chinatown who didn't even speak English. And we say, Mr. Wong, you're getting a New York Times subscription. It'll be on your way. And they say, what? And then we'd hang up and we'd write them down. We get the sale. We get the commission.
Shame on you.
I know. It's terrible.
This is why the New York Times almost exploded like 5 years ago. There was one under.
This is why the paper's going out of business, because of things like that.
Your fault. You know? I thought it was the paper boys throwing the things into the trees and in the windows. It's you. You.
It's me. I'm the source of all conflict in the world. Absolutely.
Shame on you. Now, speaking of sources of conflict, I have one last question for the hilarious and wonderful Dave Koenig. And getting back to the idea that you are now... Well, wait a minute. Actually, we never did... Did you ever reconvert to Judaism?
Yes, I reconverted back to Judaism. They accepted me with open arms and said, come on back, and it all worked out fine.
Well, what did you have to...
The show has a happy ending, see.
Well, wait a minute. What did you have to... Are you conservative, reformed, conservadox, paradox?
Well, I mean, considering I'm a Jew who converted to Catholicism and converted back to Judaism, I'd say I'm pretty reformed. You know, let's face it.
No, but when you went back, how did you... did you go to a particular... temple or a particular...
Yes. As a matter of fact, I found... as part of the story of how I converted back. See, I was never comfortable in temple as a kid. I didn't quite fit in. And then I tried Catholicism, and I would go to Catholic church, and I didn't quite fit in there. And then I found the Actors Temple, which is a temple in Manhattan in the theater district.
Mm-hmm.
The Actors Temple, and some of the former... members of the Actors Temple include Sophie Tucker, the great Joey Lewis, two of the Three Stooges. They're not even sure which two. It's great. They don't even know who was the holdout. Was it Larry? We don't know. Screw you, Mo. I'm not going to temple. It might have been Larry. We're not sure.
Might have been.
But I found the Actors Temple. So I was, during the period of time I had converted, I was going to Catholic church with icons of Jesus and Mary and Joseph. I go into the Actors Temple. I see autographed 8x10 glossies of Milton Berle, Sophie Tucker, George Burns. I said, this is a temple I can be comfortable in.
This ridiculous stained glass. What? Sorry? What?
So I started going to services at the Actors Temple. I'll tell you something, it's a great temple, and if you're ever in New York, you should stop by the Actors Temple, and you can say a prayer and worship at the same altar that Georgie Jessel did. So it's fantastic.
It really is. That's wonderful. And I know they also use the temple, as they should, as a theater. I think the downstairs is an off-Broadway theater, too.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's where I did my off-Broadway show, Hebrew School Dropout.
Oh.
So it all comes full circle.
Doesn't it always? Coming full circle here with Dave Koenig. And the question I was getting to is...
Yes, sir.
Is Judaism, now that you've seen all the different sides of it, of Judaism, Catholicism, is Judaism a bottomless well for comedy?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, of course. I mean, this is a funny... Listen, Rabbi, you know the very first comedy routine ever written is in the Bible.
Really?
In the Torah, the very first comedy routine ever written is God and Abraham are talking. They're walking down the street one day, they're talking, and God says, you know what, that village over there where all those people are stupping and doing all these terrible things, I'm going to burn it down. And Abraham says, well, wait a minute, would you burn it down if you found 100 righteous men there? And God said, well, for 100 righteous men, I won't burn the town down. And Abraham says, oh, yeah, what about 50? And God says, 50? Yeah, for 50. Well, yeah, would you? How about 20? And this is a vaudeville routine. Are you kidding me?
That's right.
This is the very first vaudeville routine ever written. So, yes, absolutely. Listen, I have respect for all religious beliefs. I do. You know what I don't like, Rabbi? I don't like proselytizing. I don't like people get out on the street trying to sell you a religion, get in the way, handing out pamphlets.
Oh, I thought you said you didn't like prostitutes, because then we would have an argument, because I love
okay
them.
With.
Yes,
like
no, prostitutes.
The other day, I was rushing. I was doing a show in Manhattan.
Yes.
And I'm rushing to the club. I'm running a little late. I'm in Times Square. A woman stops me on the street. She says, excuse me, sir, I must talk to you. I'm a Jew for Jesus. I said, that's nice, lady. I'm a Jew late for work. So these are the things, Rabbi. These are the things that we go through in life.
These are indeed, and I am very, very thrilled and delighted to have gone through them with Dave Koenig. Please remind our listeners about your new CD and also where we can see you.
Oh, absolutely, Rabbi. My new comedy CD, Your Face is Crooked, which is just terrific. You can get that on Dave Koenig, K-O-N-I-G, DaveKoenig.com, or on iTunes, or CD Baby. And if you go on my website, DaveKoenig.com, you get my full schedule. I'm doing all kinds of shows. I'll be at Mohegan Sun Casino on the 22nd, and the Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club, all kinds of great stuff. So you can get my full schedule on DaveKoenig.com, and look me up on Facebook. We'll become Facebook friends. It'll be fantastic.
It will be. Dave Koenig out. You are Koenig for a day, I have to say. Right here.
Thank you, Rabbi.
On Dave's Gone By. I'm Rabbi Saul Solomon. Let us go out with more humor from the hilarious Dave Koenig. Thank you so much, and shalom to you.
Shabbat shalom to you, Rabbi. Thank you so much.